Support for Great Minds is provided by The Wine Store in Naples. The Wine Store offers a unique selection of wines from small production, artisan, and family-owned wineries. Their in-store wine education center hosts classes for the novice and connoisseur alike. Details are at thewinestorenaples.com. Welcome to Great Minds, a wine-centric podcast that goes beyond what is in the glass and looks at the stories behind it, the culture, the people, the history, the fun, and lots more. I'm Gina Birch.
And I'm Julie Glenn, all about that fun. Just like food and produce, wine goes through seasonal swings as far as consumption goes. And now that we're in the heat of summer, it's hot. Mm-hmm. Consumers tend to lean more towards lighter, whiter wines. And rosé is finally climbing to the top of the list in an area where it had previously been shunned, mostly because of its pink, effeminate color, and also because it was marketed as sweet stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of ruined it a little bit for the American palate, at least. You know, I love the phrase "rosé every day," and I
have a T-shirt that says that for real.
And I can appreciate a good glass of it, you know, regardless of what the calendar or the thermometer says. So that's where the rosé every day comes in. And the sales have skyrocketed, by some accounts, up more than 50% in the last year. And there seems to be no end in sight.
Everybody's getting into
trend.
It.
Yeah.
All the countries. Everybody's making rosé, it seems like, but, you know, the epicenter is Provence, is it not?
It is. The gold standard, I think, and I think for many people, when it comes to quality and premier rosés are the ones that come from Provence in the southern France. And so since we're going to talk about rosé, we're going to an expert. We're going right to the heart of Provence and talking to Victor Liebel. He's with the Provence Rosé Group. Victor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
It's so great to talk to an expert who knows his Provence. You can tell by the accent.
The accent. Well, you're not putting that on, are you?
Huh? No.
Yeah, the French accent. I don't know if I have the Provence accent, but for sure I have the French one.
Well, you're from Champagne, right? Isn't that where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up in Champagne, and in fact, I moved to Provence like maybe 5 years ago.
Okay. And you've worked for a lot of the big Champagne houses. You work for some of the big boys in Bordeaux. So you've been around the block a little bit in the wine business.
Yeah, and I fell in love with Provence then.
What is it about Provence that you've fallen in love with? I mean, if you talk about Champagne and Bordeaux, those aren't any shabby little areas for wine.
Like, it's not like those are the throwaways.
No.
No, correct. I mean, I grew up in Champagne. I did all my studies in Champagne, and then I decided to move a bit and to see other region about wines in France. And when you came in Provence, I don't know if you have ever been, but it's so magnificent. I mean, the landscape, everything is so nice. The weather is nice. In Champagne, it's a bit more rainy sometimes, you know. So first, I think I fall in love with the landscape, and the appellation is pretty fun too. So we will have time to talk about that. But I pretty enjoy to work for this region now.
Introduce me to Provence. How big is it, and are there subregions within Provence?
Yeah, so in fact, if you talk all about Provence, there is in fact three region, and there is three main appellations. So if I'm talking about just vineyard, it's about 65,000 acres in total, which is a lot. And then if you talk only about Côte de Provence appellation, which is one of the main appellation, you talk about 50,000 acres.
Wow, that's a decent size when you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
So what is it that makes rosé the thing down there? Is it because of the cuisine and the weather that makes it appropriate for the area?
The landscape, the soil, or combination? What is it exactly?
Yeah, I think we should start maybe with the history. Now it's when the Phocéens from Marseille, maybe 2,500 years ago, they introduced, in fact, the grapes into France. So it means that, in fact, Provence is one of the first wine region. And then I think, it's something combined with the terroir and the soil that made the Provence, the house of rosé. Yes.
When you talk about history, the grapes got there via the Romans.
Yes, exactly. In fact, we are on this way from the Romans, so from Italy to Spain, and they introduce the grapes and they start to cultivate the grapes there. Yeah.
And then it ended up over the course of time kind of focusing on rosé. Is that because of the ability to grow the grapes that yield good rosé? I mean, is there any reason why they didn't go with red or white?
Yeah, so well, it's all about like the weather. So I would say the terroir mainly, but the weather, it's because it's really sunny in Provence. So it was pretty good to have some type of grapes like Grenache and Sarsaux that are pretty good. We know that for rosé wine. So in fact, we did the three wines, but mainly 90% of the production in Provence, it's all about rosé. And I would say like 7% for the red and 3% for the white overall.
What are the grapes that are grown? I mean, what are the, so we know in France there are a lot of legal things that we have to subscribe to have the Provence and have the AOC. So what are the grapes that you can technically use in rosé and be above board?
The two main grapes that you can find in Provence are Grenache and Sarsaux mainly. So it means like everybody is using those grapes because they are pretty good for like the structure of the wine, the fruitness of the wine. And then you can also find some like Syrah, you can find like some Roll, which is the like kind of cousin of the Vermentino. You can find some Mourvèdre. So you have pretty large choice of grapes, but mainly Grenache and Sarsaux, yes.
So you mentioned Vermentino, which is a white grape, and I know in Languedoc they can't blend them. So do you have to ferment them and crush them together when you add the whites to the red, or do you have different rules in Provence?
No, it's the same. I mean, like you can only blend white and red wine in Champagne. So we are not allowed to do that in Provence. Mm-hmm. What can we do? We can in fact put red and white grapes into the press. Okay. So we can start to blend before the end of the fermentation. As soon as the fermentation is done, you can't blend.
Okay. So you ferment and then you start the blending process.
No, they blend in the tank.
Oh, they blend in the tank.
Yeah. They do it before.
Before, correct.
Okay.
So now that you're in Provence and you see this explosion of the popularity of rosé around the world and specifically in the U.S., because I think I was reading on your website that 43% of the exports of the rosé come to the U.S. What has that been like and what do you think is fueling that new interest in the exportation of Provence rosé?
So you're right by saying it's now we saw for the past 3 years about like 40-45% of growth in terms of volume. Mm-hmm. So for sure, like the US, it's a number one market for Provence rosé. Now I think it's because we saw that in France, it's not only a trend. For me, it's more like a fade. And I think now people want to find something easy drinking, something light, something fruity. So it's like very easy to afford. I mean, to understand as a wine. So I think now people are also getting to this way of consumption that they don't want to drink something heavy. We are more in this kind of healthy way of thinking of living. So I think like rosé and especially like rosé from Provence are matching like this new way of consumption.
Are there specific characteristics of a Provence rosé that, I mean, if you smell it, you taste it, if you're a wine expert, you're like, oh, I can tell that's from Provence. Is it a fruit, the Garrigue? Is there something that you can tell us and are the people listening that's a common characteristic, something that's known across the board?
Yeah, I think I would start first with the color of the wine. The color is pale for Provence rosé, so it means that Provence producers are pretty proud, in fact, about this color because we are looking to have something pale. As we don't use any maceration or like blending, we use only like a direct press. We have this pale color. So I mean, like this, it's a signature of Provence rosé first. And then, of course, you have this fruitness on your palate. as we have a lot of sun, and we use also Sansu and Grenache that are like two grapes, very aromatic. We have this fruitness on your palate. And then we also have only like dry rosé. So as we have a lot of sun, of course, but we don't want to have something sweet. So it's always under a certain amount of sugar. So it's like, dryness, pale color, and fruitness.
Gina and I have both been in the wine industry for a while, and we recall not long ago, I mean, maybe 5-6 years ago, where it was really hard to get a rosé on a wine list, mm-hmm. or to get it on the shelf for people, because it was just so tough. It was like pulling teeth to get people to just try a dry rosé. They just assumed that it was going to be sweet. Have you seen any of that kind of pushback since you've started working with the United States market? Or is that completely gone? Are we just finally over that?
No, I mean, I would say like now 80% of people are okay with a dry rosé. We still heard sometimes people looking for this sweetness, but yeah, we found this always, but not quite a lot. Yeah.
Now you're also the brand ambassador for Chateau de Bern.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting better with my French. I'm working on it.
Chateau de Berne, yes.
That French R. It's a challenge for us Americans.
So we've got two bottles of yours, the Emotion and the Inspiration, and they both are they're such beautiful bottles, and we're going to take a picture and put it on the podcast, on our website and Facebook. Which one should we try first, Emotion or Inspiration?
I would go for the Inspiration first.
Okay. All right. Now, this one to me is a very masculine bottle. It's square. It's very unique. It's not. It would definitely stand out on a shelf.
This is what's cool about provincial. Wines from Provence and these rosés is that they can do fun labels, because you're not going to be laying this thing down for posterity. You're not going to open one in 25 years and see how it's aged. Correct. So that gives you like license to have a little bit more fun with the labeling.
Yeah, so we can have fun, but I think it's also like the way of construction is changing a bit. So if I can just speak about that a bit, it's we know now that we have, of course, rosé. We know that rosé is like dry, it's fruity. But I think now people start to look at some difference to the wine. And it's what we did also with another cuvée from the sister company. But I think now people like champagne, they want to try different things. Even if you are speaking about champagne, you want a blanc de blanc, you want a blanc de noir. So you have some difference. And now with rosé, I think people want to find this differentiation into the wine. So it means, okay, I know this is fruity, I know this is dry, but I will like to taste something different. So either for now we don't really age the rosé, but I think we will see more and more some rosés that we will be able to age a bit.
That are age worthy.
In the future, yes.
Well, this is different because to me this has a lot of structure and it's got some nice spice on the finish. And
this is why Provence is the place to go for rosé.
I mean, no offense to everybody else.
You know, I don't mean to just, pigeonhole everybody else is not as good. But there is something very different about a rosé from Provence. And I've had rosés recently. I mean, rosé every day. Come on.
Yeah.
But they just seem to be a little bit more obvious with their fruit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this has fruitiness to it, but it's not on the front. You know, of the palate. It's kind of something that you access a little bit later.
Yeah, it's in the middle and to the end and the finish. Yeah.
Are you tasting Inspiration right now?
Yes, we are very inspired by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so in fact, if I talk just about the two cuvées, I will start with Inspiration because it's the one that you are tasting right now. Inspiration, we did this wine by using quite a lot of Grenache, 70% of Grenache, in fact. So it means like Grenache for the Provence rosé, it's like the backbone of the wine. So as we use 70%, we will have this really nice balance on your palate and this structure that we will not really have with Emotion, because it's just a different rosé, a different taste profile. So Inspiration, we did this one as a gastronomic rosé. So the thing is, we want to have this wine on a table during a dinner
with food,
to match and to pair with your food. Mm-hmm. And I think it's getting more and more like better with a nice pairing.
I can see that. And what's with the name? Inspiration.
For us, we were like looking at this bottle, this nice shape, and when you see that and you drink rosé, you want to get inspired. Yeah. You know? So it's like all this curvy shape, this square bottle. So the square bottle, in fact, is coming from the chateau. So you can see on the bottle, on the bottom of the bottle, you can see the chateau. Mm-hmm. And we have, in fact, two square towers, and it was not very common to have square towers in France. Most of the chateaux in France use like a round tower. Okay. So that's why, in fact, 10 years ago, we have decided to use this shape for our bottles. So it's kind of the signature of Ben. So it was okay getting inspired. So new things, you try, you test a new wine, you test a pretty nice quality because we won quite a lot of medal with this one. So, yeah, it came from this.
Okay. Now, we know that every store and boutique wine shop is going to have a different price, but what is the general price for these, the inspiration and the emotion?
So, for inspiration, we try to be like around like 19.99. It's like the price that we want to be. For emotion, we are more about like $16 a bottle. Yes.
So, you're like between 16 and 19 on these?
Yes.
Yeah, 16 emotion, inspiration, 19, 20, yes.
What would be the most that you would be willing to spend on a rosé? I'm just curious.
It's funny because when we look at the data, in fact, people are more looking when they want to buy, and when they buy a Provence rosé, most of the sales are done about like $20.
Okay.
So people are ready to spend like $19, $20, $21 for a Provence rosé.
Now, this one, the emotion that we're trying now, and
yes.
For people listening, you're going to be able to spot these on the shelf because the bottles are so unique. The emotion to me is very feminine and curvy, but also a little retro with the white stripes.
White horizontal stripes.
Yeah. And it looks like South Beach to me almost. You know, it's something I want to have when I'm on the beach or when I'm dressed up or at a garden party or something. And I can't wait to try it.
Or a white party, you know,
ooh,
where
yes.
everybody has to wear white. This would be perfect for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's what we want you to do. It's like the perfect Provence rosé. So emotion, it's like a blend also of Grenache and Cinsault. Mainly, we use a bit of Syrah and Roll. So you will have a different taste, something more like on the fruit, very easy drinking, something like the typical Provence rosé. So if you are looking for Provence rosé, you will go for emotion for the taste. So it's like the perfect bottle by the pool to share a good moment with friends. It's like the easy drinking Provence rosé.
It's easy drinking. It's got great fruit, but it's also got a little floral characteristic,
where yes.
the other one has a little more spice. And
yes,
what does the Syrah bring to the table? I'm just curious. In a rosé, I mean, I know what it does in a red wine, but what does Syrah do, and how does it impact a rosé?
So Syrah, in fact, it's pretty good. I mean, we have another estate called Ultimate Provence, and we produce a wine called Urban Provence. And this winery, so it's another winery, it's not Château de Berne, it's another terroir. And this terroir for this estate is pretty good for Syrah because it's not like most of the terroir in Provence are based like on this limestone soil. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Ultimate Provence, it's under like a sandstone soil. So it means Syrah, it's pretty good like to grow up like Syrah on this kind of soil. So Syrah gives to the wine as like maybe a Rhone Valley wine, this spiciness and pepper notes. So it's pretty nice to have a few amount of Syrah on your rosé because you will have this aftertaste and this very long and pleasant finish on your palette.
Does Chateau Baron make other things besides the rosé? I'm sure you have a whole portfolio.
Yeah, so mainly rosé, of course, 80% of the production, and then about like 10 and 10 for the red and white. But the red and white are like very like a small production, so we don't bring, in fact.
So we won't find them in the U.S.?
No, correct. Okay. It's only like for France, local market, and a bit of Europe.
Well, that's just fine.
Well, I guess we'll have to come to you.
Exactly. You have to come. It's a pretty nice estate. It's all about lifestyle. It's authentic. It's traditional. But with this nice modernity, if you get inside, you will see like we have a nice hotel, Relais, Chateau, five stars. We have two restaurants. We have one of them is one Michelin star restaurant. with our chef Benjamin Colomba. So it's all about lifestyle, a nice spa. So it's in fact the first destination when you talk about wine tourism, no tourism.
Wine tourism.
In Provence.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, wine tourism. Yeah.
You're setting the bar then when it comes to that in your region. Nice.
I wanted to ask you a little question about Provence, and because I like to think of wine as one of the main food groups. Mm-hmm. So what kind of things do people eat in Provence? What kind of dishes are typical that would be something that you, like say if you were going to have a Provence party and have all these wonderful rosés, what kind of foods would you suggest people lay out to go with that?
So the cool thing with rosé, it's pretty good to pair with a lot of things. If I have to pick something, I would say like all these Mediterranean dishes, like a nice salad with some like fresh vegetables, like from the south of France. I would say like seafood too. Mm-hmm. And we did a nice pairing last time. In fact, it was with Inspiration and with our chef, and we did like a lobster roll with some scallion on top. And in fact, like this spiciness from the scallion was pairing so good with Inspiration. So yeah, seafood, lobster, oyster, and some salad, chicken salad, like Caesar salads. Yeah.
I love the give and take with cuisine, because the New England lobster roll, which is famous from northeastern United States, being served in Provence along with this rosé, which I can see how that would be a great
and
pairing.
Cheese, of course, some nice salty, fatty cheeses.
Yeah, light cheese.
The creamy ones, right? The double creams.
Exactly.
I'm going there.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I just felt my thighs expand thinking about them. I love that. Those cheeses.
Cheese is good for you.
Oh, yeah, it is. As is wine.
And as you can have more like Grenache, sometimes you have this structure on your palate. So you can match with like heavy food. I mean, heavy, like strongest, like cheese and things. So, yeah, you have a large panel, to pair rosé.
Yeah, it can go all the way. And like you mentioned earlier, these wines, they're not necessarily lighter or lower in alcohol than any other wines, or less sugar, less calories or anything, but they go along with lighter cuisine, right? You're talking about people having more of a healthy lifestyle. They want to have things like salad niçoise or like salmon or whatever. And these are the kind of wines that really just kind of go along with that, or a plant-based diet that people are all into right now. So these are the wines that can go with that. And Provence is just, I mean, have you had a rosé from somewhere other than Provence that you were impressed with?
Put him on the spot.
Yeah.
No offense.
I would say,
I'm just curious because, I mean, you always got to, just like, you know, a Frenchman has to try the New England lobster roll, you got to try the other the other wines around the world.
Of course, no. I pretty love like champagne rosé, but it's not still wine, so I can say that. But no, I taste some Spanish rosé, and it's not very common, but it was pretty good. I think we are on the same kind of climate, like terroir. So yeah, from Spain, it was pretty good. And what I like, in fact, is when I can see this freshness on the rosé, because I have this palette coming from Champagne, where there is a lot of like kind of acidity to the champagne because of the north part with the rain, etc. We don't have a lot of sun. So I think I'm pretty familiar with freshness to the wine. So that's why I pretty love like Provence rosé, because of this freshness and this minerality coming from the limestone soil that you have on your palate. So, and I think we have kind of the same in Spain too.
Well, before we go, I wanted to ask you about, we've been doing some series on labels of wines. What do we look for on a label from Provence to know what we're getting is the top quality in the bottle? I mean, do you have certain rules and regulations that will tell the consumer what they're getting?
I mean, first it will be the appellation. So if you have Côte de Provence on the bottle, you will make sure that you are matching all the rules of the Côte de Provence appellation. So
otherwise, they can't put it on the bottle.
No,
even
correct.
If it comes from there.
Exactly. You have some other appellation. I mean, you have like IGP Méditerranée, which is another appellation. Even if it's coming from Provence, it's a different sometimes area in Provence. So it's coming from Provence, but you can't. Put the name Côte de Provence. So for me, first, the appellation is really important.
Côte
and then
de
I
Provence.
Think, and yeah, an, Côte de Provence.
And that's an AOP. Is an AOP at a higher level than an IGT?
IGP, yes.
IGP, sorry.
Yes, correct.
Is there anything higher than AOP in Provence?
No, we don't have. It's like AOP, it's like the
premier.
The top appellation, yes. So we have three main appellations, but I would say like Côte de Provence, it's the biggest one.
Of course, Côte de Provence is where you are and where your winery that you represent is, but there are other AOCs out there. You got Coteau d'Aix in Provence and Les Baux de Provence. There's also Bandol, Cassis, and Coteau Varois.
That's what we need to look for on the shelves.
That's what we're looking for, is the AOP. Well, it's been great talking with you. Victor, I want to thank you for joining us. It was fun talking with you and learning a little bit more about the epicenter of rosé, which is taking the world by storm, especially going into the summer months. It was great catching up with you and learning a little bit.
And now we're going to drink the rest of these bottles.
We don't need to record all that.
No.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for having me today. If you want more information, you can also go to our website, which is provencerose.com. So thank you very much for today.
Great Minds is produced at WGCU Studios on FGCU campus in Fort Myers, Florida. Our producers for online media are Anna Bejarano and Tara Callaghan. Technical production is by Mike Canary.
Great Minds theme music for Zante is by Colin Mannon. To get in touch, check greatminds.org. Thanks for listening.